Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled. Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift. My name is Gianni. This is episode 91. And every fortnight or week or at some interval on the internet, we bring you a show and we speak to some of the developers from our patch of the world, the sort of Southeast Asia, Australasia part. This week, we're joined by Ali McLean from Robot House. Ali, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to learn all about a couple of projects that you've been working on, kind of in the progress with. But primarily, we're going to learn about Rumu, which is a point-and-click adventure game, which came out at the end of last year that we were very taken by, inspired by at PAX. We want to learn all a bit more about that today.
Hey, who's co-hosting with you today, Johnny?
We've also got, obviously, in the studio, we've got Mitch, who is doing a good job in introducing himself, and Sarah, who's joining us from the internet as well. Hi, Sarah. Hi, Mitch.
I didn't take over his position. Surprising.
Yeah, everybody thought I was fired because you were on the show so much, and that didn't happen.
Anyway.
It's all right, Mitch. We're partners in crime.
Yeah. What else are we checking out today?
Well, first up, though, we'll be learning about a new initiative that you've been working on, Ali, the Working Lunch, a mentorship program supporting women in games. Very exciting stuff.
All that and more coming up. Let's jump into it, shall we?
Did you know Pixel Sift is available on other platforms? You can find previous episodes on iTunes, Pocket Casts, YouTube, and on the Pixel Sift website.
So if you're just joining us, we're with Ali. She is working on a project called The Working Lunch. Now, if people haven't heard about it, Ali, what is The Working Lunch and what does it aim to achieve?
Yeah, so The Working Lunch is a mentorship program for entry-level women in games here in Australia. So we kind of aim to create opportunities and foster these long-term positive working relationships between women who are awesome at what they do in games, in everything from art and design all the way through to finances and policy making, and we try to connect them with up-and-coming people who are really going to shape and define and revolutionize the industry as we go forward.
Why did you guys decide to kind of formulate and start this program? Like, what was the driving force behind that?
Yeah, it's really, I think, inspired for me at least by my own experiences entering the industry. I had a really roundabout path into games, as I know most people do. And I definitely wouldn't have had the opportunities that I had or been able to sort of navigate my way through the industry if not for this group of really incredible women who I was really fortunate to fall in with, who gave me guidance and wisdom and emotional support and moral support. And I just wanted to make sure, I guess, that the next generation of women entering the industry have that opportunity too. And I was really lucky to be able to find financial support for that with IGEA, so the Interactive Games and Entertainment Association, and they've been able to just been really incredible actually in all ways, from formulating the ideas with me to funding the program to helping us find mentors to everything. Yeah, so it's been great.
When you were setting this whole thing up, what were some of the challenges that you came across, I mean, in the early days, and are there challenges that you're still facing now with trying to run this?
Yeah, it's really hard to run diversity initiatives, as anyone who's ever done it would tell you. It was definitely in the early days one of the biggest sort of challenges that we came across was trying to find a really broad spectrum of mentors, because the thing about people who are suitable to be mentors is that they're all really busy, and you have to make sure that A, you can make time for them, but also that they are the right person for the program, that we don't just have, you know, 15 people who all have similar roles, really wanted to make sure that we represent a broad cross-section of the industry. So that was hard at first, but then luckily the Australian industry is just full of really generous, incredible women. So we were able to recruit a lot of people. And then now, so we had our first event, what feels like a month ago because I've been so busy, but I think it was 2 weeks ago. And that was sort of our first mentor event where we got all the mentors together and we did a workshop about what it means to be a mentor, which was really inspiring. And our next event is when all of our mentees come in for the first time, which I'm excited and terrified of because there's something very personally and also professionally, I think, thrilling but also intimidating about all of these new minds and these people who are so inspired and so passionate and so energetic and trying to make sure that we really do justice to everything that we want them to be able to achieve is definitely a task.
Do you feel like it's been very successful in doing that and being able to lift people up so far? Like, and how's the reception been to this so far? Like, do you feel like, you know, you've definitely reached out to enough people and it's gaining traction and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I first started doing this, I was really surprised that we were able to find a financial partner who really understood the morals and I guess the values behind why we wanted to create the Working Lunch. So I mean, that blew me away to begin with. And then the quality of the mentors that we were able to recruit really was very heartening to me. And then we had over 100 applications for people who wanted to be mentees, and we only have about 10 spots. So that was a whole thing. And reading through, there was just, I think, probably the best moment that I've had so far with the Working Lunch was really that day reading through all of the mentee applications and just being blown away by the drive and the passion and the creativity and also just the really broad cross-section of interests. And people are so passionate about really specific things. Like, we had this really incredible applicant who wants to make games to help educate people about first aid and medicine in rural communities. And I was like, can you mentor me? how are you so cool already? And you haven't even started your career yet. So it's going really well.
Can you see that expanding into the future? Because 10 spots and 100 applications, that's insane. That's wonderful. Like, do you think you guys will grow and open more slots for you know, mentors to come into it as time goes on and things kind of expand and it gets easier to manage?
Yeah, look, I mean, the end goal for us at Working Lunch is to eliminate the experience of being the only woman in the room. So being the only woman in the boardroom, being the only woman on your dev team, being the only woman in a marketing conference, you know, that's the plan. So the more people that we can connect with mentors and the more mentees and the more classes we can get through, I mean, that's obviously as long as we expand slowly, I think, and make sure we do it in a way that is manageable and does justice to the amount of individual attention that everyone deserves, because ultimately, we want to create something that is meaningful and long-term and really beneficial for everyone involved.
Squint57 actually has a comment from Twitch chat. He'd like to know that how exactly was the project funded? So who did you get funding from, if you're able to disclose that?
Yeah, so our funding comes from IGEA, so the Interactive Games and Entertainment Association. They do all kinds of incredible things within the industry, advocating for the industry with government here in Australia and in New Zealand. And they're really passionate about making the industry more diverse and, you know, really fixing up that 18% women working in games. So, they fund our programs, but we also have spots for sponsorship from other companies, and those are things that are definitely coming up in the future. So, you know, game studios or publications who are interested in funding events and sponsoring travel for mentees and speakers to come to events. So, yeah.
Ali, you spoke a little bit about the mentoring that you received. Can you tell us about why that was important for you and kind of developing your career?
Absolutely, yeah. So I, as I said, came to games a little bit unconventionally. I started in cosplay and then got into sort of marketing and community management and then production and then eventually doing what I'm doing now, which we'll talk about later. So for me, it was really meaningful to find women who I could see, I guess, doing what I thought I would never be given permission to do. And not necessarily because of my gender. I just thought that you had to kind of have this like secret piece of paper that said you were allowed to be a game developer. Like there was a secret club that you had to be invited into. And I was just kind of waiting for permission. And it wasn't until I met people like Megan Marie, who's the senior communications manager over at Crystal Dynamics working on Tomb Raider, and Ray Johnston, who's the editor of Gizmodo and obviously incredible TV and radio extraordinaire, and Kelsey Gamble, who's the ANZ community manager at Bethesda. Three people who definitely inspired and mentored me immensely in the early years of my career and still continue to inspire and mentor me and are close friends now. And I saw them really not waiting for anyone to give them permission, and going out and changing the industry and creating things that other people weren't creating and doing it in a way that was very unique to themselves and their own sort of point of view. And I thought that seems pretty good. And then I did it.
Now, I see that Ray's working with you on the working lunch. Who are some of the other people that you've got working with you to mentor the next generation of up and coming game makers?
Oh, there are so many. You're testing my memory, so I'm going to try and remember everyone. The people who came to our mentor event a couple weeks ago, so we had Kelsey, who I just mentioned. We also had, obviously, Raylene Knowles, who is the wonderful woman who is our representative from IGEA. So she organizes all of the things to do with Working Lunch that are beyond me. So things like booking event spaces and organizing and bringing everyone together. She manages to somehow coordinate the schedules of some of the busiest people in games. So she's some kind of hero. And we also have Lucy O'Brien from IGN. We have Stefan Dixon, formerly of Good Game, who works at Channel 7 now as guest mentor. We have Kim Allam, who's a studio manager at Defiant Development. We have V from Stirfire Studios. We have Katie Steggs from Lumi Consulting. And, you know, I could go on and on, but it's, you know, people basically
the big
spread
names
out in all different disciplines. So, and people who really have storied careers working with some of the most well-known, but also some of the most interesting and exciting companies operating within the space at the moment. So it's so exciting to me to think that I think if I, as sort of a, at university age, had walked into a room full of women like that and been told, you know, you are capable, you are worthy, and there is a space for you in the industry, I think that my life would have been very different. And I hope that that gets to happen for our class of mentees. I'm so excited to meet them in a few weeks.
So there's a number of programs or part of this, the Working Lunch. What's the next stage once you meet with the mentees?
Yeah, so our first, it's basically a series of workshops over the course of a year. So you get, it's a year-long mentorship, and at each workshop we focus on a different thing. So it could be focusing on teaching you our freelancing 101, so like how do you invoice people, what are client expectations, all those kinds of things. And there's also like a class on self-care in the workplace and, you know, what do I do to not, you know, explode of stress. And then also more concrete skills, like depending on specifically what you're interested in. We also have guest speakers at each event. So we had the amazing CEO of Espresso Communications come to our last event and give us a talk about, you know, the foundations of mentorship and why it matters and how it matters based on her incredible career of mentoring people within communications. And it's really focused on kind of building this framework of skills and knowledge and resources and just so that you leave the program with this toolkit to really conquer the industry. And the core of that is really the Working Lunch Handbook, which is a book that we've been working on for nearly a year now, which collates a whole bunch of different resources as well as personalized advice and thoughts and wisdom from people like Brenda Romero and Megan Marie and Siobhan Reddy and Robin Hunicky from you know, some of the most incredible women in the industry.
Now, you had 100 women apply for the first program. Now, you're going to obviously continue this on and let it develop. If people are interested in being part of it, how's the best place for them to be part of it?
For sure. So our applications have closed for this year, but we are always open to hearing from people who are passionate about the future of their careers, or even people who are interested in mentoring and coming and speaking at events. And if you follow us on Twitter, Working Lunch, and it's a 1 instead of an L because someone stole the handle before we could get to it.
Hey, what happens?
Or you can go to work. You can go to workinglunch.online and there are forms that you can fill out and apply and tell us what you're interested in. Even if you don't get accepted to be a mentee or a mentor, we do read everything that everyone sends us, and we do, if we have anything that anyone we can connect you with or any opportunities we think might be relevant to you, we do still reach out to everyone that we can.
What are you looking for in regards to mentors and mentees? Like what would you like in someone who would like to be either of those two classifications?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to being a mentee, the applicants who were really successful with us were people who really knew what they wanted. So people who were really specific in their passion, people who could show that they'd already taken steps towards that path, and people who were really interested not just in developing themselves, which is obviously very important, but also contributing to the broader industry. And so if we as a team invest in you, how are you then going to go on to make this industry a better place? That's what we're really excited about in mentees. And in mentors, it's a bit of everything, really. We're looking at people who have something to pass on, and that could be, you know, technical skills and expertise in a particular area, or it could be some fascinating experience that you've had with the industry, some wisdom that you'd like to pass on, or it could be, are you someone who facilitates internships or placements or fellowships? Then obviously we're interested in anyone really who feels that they have something to contribute to the next wave of people who are going to revolutionize games.
It sounds like a fascinating project, and I'm very excited to talk to the people who come out of the project, the next level of mentees who come out, and see some of the great things that people and women in Australia can make in games. Very exciting.
Oh, I'm sure you will be interviewing them. They'll all be amazing.
That's you can find out more about. We'll be putting links up to all of that on our website. Right now, though, let's jump into our next topic, shall we?
Pixel Civ.
It's not Pixel Civ. It's Pixel Sift.
Pixel Civ.
If you're still joining us, if you're just joining us,
I feel like I'm on the back end of a lot of these promos.
You are. You've got a very good voice, Mitch. We like to use you as much as we can.
Specifically, the word "use" was used there.
Yeah, okay.
Use you, Mitch.
Yeah, that's cool.
Part of a team. If you're just joining us, Ali from Robot House, who has probably one of the best titles that I've come across as a game runner. Ali, what is a game runner?
I get this question a lot more than I thought I would.
And cyberpunky, and I really like it.
He was in the office earlier. It's like, she's a game runner. That's like the best thing ever.
I'm changing my name to podcast runner, I think.
I was very excited the day that I got my game runner business card for the first time. So it is kind of like being a showrunner for TV. You do a little bit of everything. It's largely a really creative role, but it's also very heavily involved in production and studio management. So I do a lot of the business side of things too. But it means that when it comes to a project like Rumu, I pitch the game and I get to collaborate with the whole team at every stage, whether it's concept art or level design, game design, sound, score, directing voice actors, all the things.
Get your hands.
So you mentioned that you started off in cosplay. How did that happen? How did you move from a very artistic, that's very artistic and very, it's a very, where you make things, to creating mm-hmm. digital stuff? How did that journey happen?
It's a long story, but I was in cosplay because I love games and I love pop culture and I love communities. And so it was a really natural evolution for me to move into community management. I got my first sort of real, legitimate community gig as a consultant with CD Projekt Red on The Witcher 3, which was obviously a really nice win to have at the start of my career. And then I, from there, went on into more sort of marketing and then production-focused things, which kind of don't really go hand in hand, but for some reason for me felt quite natural. And then luckily I came to Hammerfall Publishing at a time where they were ready to start their own sort of their own original IP focused studio. And so I got to kind of step up, and they really took a chance on training me and putting me in charge of something that is very exciting and really a once in a lifetime opportunity. So yeah, a bit of a crazy ride.
Now, Rumu was a game that really kind of captured our hearts and our attention when we saw it at PAX. I had a chance to play through it completely very recently. But for people who haven't seen it or weren't able to check it out at PAX, what is Rumu?
Yeah, so Rumu is a point-and-click adventure game, kind of like Monkey Island, but really, really sad and about robots. It's a journey, really, an emotional journey about a robot vacuum cleaner with feelings. So it kind of explores all these different relationships within this home. So, yeah, kind of like WALL-E. But
there's definitely a WALL-E vibe, yep. it was something really interesting about this genre, and I'm just wondering, why did you go towards a point-and-click adventure game, and what sort of things were you drawing inspiration from?
Yeah, Rumu definitely evolved a lot from the early stages. We didn't really know what genre it was going to fit into. We just knew we had this story that we really wanted to tell. And so it was a process of elimination, really going through lots of different variations of how to tell this story and what's the best way to tell this story. And, you know, to start out with, it had this crazy branching narrative, and there were all these things like there was a cat AI system and there was like humans patrolling the house and all this kind of stuff. And ultimately, again, every decision that we made was, what's the most faithful way to tell the story that we want to tell? And as it came around, really going back to all of our roots and games that we all loved growing up turned out to be the best way to go. So you've got your Monkey Islands and all that. But also for me, it was like the Anastasia point-and-click adventure game.
Oh, wow.
which is one of my fondest childhood memories. And there are a lot of similarities between that game and Rumu, and no one will ever notice that.
Drawing your inspirations there.
I'm going to be playing them back-to-back now, just like next to each other. Like, next where week. Are they?
Oh, please do. I will play it with you. It's fantastic.
Is it something you can even get? Or is it like it's drifted off into the ether now to be able to find
I'm sure
it.
Someone can find it.
You can still buy it on Amazon.
Really?
But it's like a whole thing.
Oh, it sounds like a project. It sounds really good. one of the things that kind of really stuck with me was this: the feeling of the future that was in Rumu, and how it felt close, but obviously still a bit futuristic. Tell me a bit about how that kind of came about, and the story of Rumu was sort of developed.
Yeah, I mean, we worked with a good friend of mine and one of my favorite people in the world, Daniel McMahon. Who's an incredible writer who you would know from things like L.A. Noir and Forza Horizon, games very similar to Rumu. And
I mean, Forza Horizon has wheels.
Yep. And a big heart.
Are you going to add like hat DLC so Rumu can have a little detective's hat?
Please do that.
Honestly, there are so many like videos I could send you of Rumu wearing various hats and sunglasses. So what was the question again? Oh, how did we develop the story?
Yeah, how did it kind of build the world?
We always knew we wanted it to be kind of near future, and we wanted to tell a story of a family that people could either feel was their own family or feel that they would know someone who would be part of that family. And so it was important that we didn't go too futuristic with it. So in our heads, it's kind of 2025-ish, you know, and when you start looking at kind of smart homes that exist today, they're very similar to our house with the strip lighting that's all wired in with your Amazon Echo and your Hue lights and everything. There's nothing really aside from the single motion state appliances in the home that is really too out there and futuristic.
I tell you what, I've got a robot vacuum cleaner at home, and it is.
Do
one of,
you?
I do. It's one of my favorite things, but I'm very cautious about treating it with respect. And and whenever I see videos,
and like people say that as a joke to us, but it makes me really happy because that was one of the things that when we first set out to make the game, it was like, I want people to look at the appliances in their home differently after they finish the game and think about what it means to own something.
I spent a lot of time fondly thinking about Sammy, my robot vacuum cleaner.
You've named it?
Yeah, very important. And
as you should.
And also because it does a task that I really don't want to do. So it's very valuable in my heart.
That's its purpose in life, isn't
exactly.
it? Rough.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, it does a great job. So what I would do want to ask about, we're talking about this sort of relation and interaction between humanity and robotics. What do you think about all those videos where they kick the hell out of those Boston
Horrifying.
Dynamics robots?
I really want to distinguish myself as separate to those people so that when the robots do rise up, they know that I'm on their side. I think Rumu is one step towards proving that to them.
I think we're going to go make a YouTube channel where we're just hugging the robots and
yeah,
giving them like
terrible,
flowers
yeah.
and things.
Like the one recently where it opened the door for the other robot. There's another follow-up video where there's a guy and he's like kicking it. Like,
not nice.
Just
not
the
good.
Worst.
I'm really worried about robots that can open doors. For some reason, that's more upsetting to me than anything else.
The game is really, really fascinating. It has this great sort of discovery-style story, similar to games you would have played, a bit like Firewatch or Gone Home. It's a self-contained sort of story, and it's something you can get through quite easily. Is that the sort of game that you like to play these days, Ali, or is that something that you just have been inspired by others to make something like that?
Oh, that's my favorite kind of experience. I think I really value games that respect my time. I don't have 80 hours to sink into a game these days. And so if I can get an experience that really is nourishing in, you know, 2 to 3 hours and, you know, leaves me with something to think about and leaves me with these memorable, beautiful visuals like Firewatch did and leaves me with characters that I will think about for years like Gone Home did, then that's a really special experience to me, and those are the kind of games that we want to make at Robot House is these contained, narrative-driven, character-driven experiences. So, yeah, definitely those are the kind of games that we all play.
The game came out sort of late last year. How has it gone, and what's been the reception?
We were just blown away, honestly. This is our debut feature-length title, so we didn't really know what to expect releasing an original IP because all of us have only ever really worked on established IPs before. And also being the first game for a studio and having it be such an unusual little title about a vacuum cleaner with feelings, we really didn't know what to expect. And then it went crazy. The response at launch time was nuts. Obviously, we got featured on the front page of Steam and that was everywhere. And then all of our reviews have been overwhelmingly positive, and honestly the best part of it has been this lovely community that's developed around the game and the fan art that they share and the stories that they tell and the theorizing as to the many questions that we sort of left up to interpretation. If you're the kind of player that explores the house, you would have found a few little threads that we left in there, and I love going on the forums and on Steam and seeing people trying to figure those things out and not telling them anything.
It's good. Just leave them. Now, is Rumu's tale told? Is that it for Rumu, or will there be a Rumu 2?
I would say that releasing Rumu in December last year was the start of our journey with Rumu, and I'm really excited about where we might get to take it in the future.
Well, I want to know the refrigerator story, so, you know.
Yes. There's some
there was a time when, you know, if you go to the fridge and you click on it and the ice will come out of the ice machine.
Yep.
There was a time for I want to say like 8 months of development where the ice had feelings and also the ice machine was kind of a rail gun that would like shoot ice dramatically across the room. And that was something that got cut really close to release, but I will always remember it fondly.
We have another question from Twitch chat. Squint57 would like to know if there are any other plans for future robot-themed games from you guys.
Yeah, I mean, the studio is called Robot House. So that's not unintentional.
Any non-robot games in the pipeline or just not even going to worry
no,
about
it's
it?
Just robots and houses. That's,
that's
it.
Oh, man. I mean, I wish that I could tell you more about what we're working on at the moment, but there are a bunch of things bubbling at Robot House thanks to the success of Rumu and the incredible support that we've seen. So I can't wait to be able to talk about what our next thing is, but I can't do it yet.
Well, it's very exciting. And if you have, if you've got a couple of hours, do yourself a favor, I think, and play through Rumu. It's one of the most interesting things. And I think as an Australian, I'm very proud that we have games like this coming out and, love this future. Got to hug a robot. Go and hug a robot.
Home and dress up your vacuum cleaner.
I'm going to take a picture of my robot and you can see it, Mitch.
Okay, I can't wait to have that. Yeah.
Bring a robot.
The question is that going to anger the robot or is it going to express your love for it? Because, you just don't know. You can't make an assumption.
That's true. I shouldn't put my feelings onto a robot. It has to be a two-way sort of relationship.
Yeah, you can, clean up the studio.
That's it. We'll be putting links up to Rumu on our website, and you should definitely give it a go if you have the chance. Ali, thank you very much for joining us. It's been phenomenal to learn all about the working lunch and more about Rumu, and we're very excited to learn more about the house and robot-themed games that are in the future for Robot House. We'll be putting links up to everything on our website, and that website is pixelsift.com.au. If you're listening to this podcast, you might be listening to us on a variety of different platforms. We go as a video every fortnight, but you can now listen to us on Spotify as well. So,
Are we still riding high from that victory?
Spotify's pretty good. It's pretty good to be there. and more great podcasts are popping up there every now and then. So listen to some tracks and then listen to some great podcasts as well.
Shout outs to Spotify.
Spotify, thank you. now, Mitch, if people want to find out information about the show and when we've got upcoming episodes, where should they head to?
Yeah, so that can all be found on our social network places. That's Twitter. You can search PixelSiv and pretty much anything and we'll pop up now. Worked very hard to make that happen. And Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, it's all there.
And Sarah, we've got a number of older episodes as well. So if people want to go back and listen to any of the great chats that we've had with developers from around Australasia, where should they go to for that?
Well, you can go to our website to stream episodes. You can subscribe as a podcast, either on iTunes, Pocket Cast, or using the RSS link on our page. And if you're listening to us exclusively on one of these platforms, I just want to remind you that we go live every fortnight and our next episode will be out on the
15th
of April. That doesn't seem correct.
15th of March.
15th of March. Who didn't edit that's not my fault.
I was actually about to do that and then I forgot.
That's all right.
You went fast enough, Mitch. You're fired. I'm taking over your place.
What I would say is you can subscribe on all those platforms and then you won't even need to worry about the dates. It'll just pop up in your
Exactly. You just why don't you subscribe? Just do yourself the favor. We're living in the age of technology here, people.
And vacuum cleaners and...
And vacuum cleaners, yeah.
Ali, thank you. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and we're very excited to see what more is coming out from Robot House.
Thank you.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today at sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.